Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Business Association Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, talking directly to you from our studio in Washington, D.C. Again, this is the Blog Talk Radio, New Africa Business Association of Washington, D.C. Tonight, we're going to be opening our mics, and we're going to be talking about a subject that came up, and that is affirmative action. And we're dealing with racism that we thought we had solved more than 60 years ago. So again, welcome to the New Africa Business Association Blog Talk Radio. I'll be right back, and we will continue our show just after a quick sponsoring services. Show again. I am your host, Bilal Masadiq Bynum, and this is the New Africa Business Association Blog Talk Radio. Look forward to
my host coming on.
And distribute it anywhere you want.
And now that we are over, we have been free.
But at the same time, there is so much that we don't know about our own culture.
And so, but what we do know, we also can't discuss it in public because it's something they don't want to hear.
And so they put labels on us. And of course, everything comes to those who cover the media. White folks call themselves Jewish.
Things are on all of these places.
And that's another example of white supremacy telling African Americans, in other words, control. This bill that we heard that John Lewis bill, of course, you see what happened. Now we have the bill that says you have an affirmative action where these colleges are any other schools that is funded by federal funds, white folks.
Seems to think that these schools belong to them.
You know, it's their school, but we taxpayers are paying for these schools, for everything that's been built. But again, you can't go because of the color of your skin, and therefore, the better schools are again for white folks.
I don't see how anyone should have the right to tell African Americans what you can do in your own country that you built.
And I don't see the way that you can go to any particular school or any affirmative action thing. And you can come up with, you can decide, you can have a, in other words, that's the point. Not African American. And that is a situation that we as African Americans has got to find the unity as to where they can make their own decisions, because the decision makers, let's face it, the decision makers are most of them are white.
just can make decisions for us. I don't care whether they're Republican or Democrat.
I don't care where you go in all the world.
you're going to find the Jewish faith, religious. So my question is, why, when it comes to any representation or anyone I am a Jewish person here in the United States, it's always a European white-looking person. It's never any of the rest of the world, which are Africans, Asians, Muslims, and Arabs, and Jewish, all the way. But the only ones we see are these European, Caucasian people who say, we're the Jews. And if you say anything about the Hebrews or the Jews, then you are look that word up, and I don't see a thing looking up to come from. My point is this. If no one can be a Jew, but a Caucasian or white person, then that is discrimination. So again, if getting angry with Kyrie Irving by saying, by Kyrie Irving as an African American who's a heritage from slavery just like the rest of us, but now that we have after so many years, we can express our opinion about religion, our religious belief, and we believe that the Hebrews originated in Africa, and African American is a part of that heritage of Hebrews that originated in Africa. So by saying that the Hebrew religion belongs to African American, I don't see where that should upset anyone unless you're a white person who hates anything that represents black. So that's my opinion, and we're going to open up the mic because we're going to steer in opinion. Again, this is the New Africa Business Association. I probably had my host on, but seems like you may have dropped off on me again. But anyway, our mics are going to be open this evening, and we're going to have a discussion. And that discussion, unfortunately, is that we're living in some very hateful times. And this election that comes up, it's about more hate than it is about trying to have a democracy where we're supposed to be trying to live with liberty, justice, and the pursuit of one's happiness. But it seems as though this election is all about if the Republicans get in office, we're going to bring back the old board. The Republicans get in office, we're going to now, the election is going to be bigger than it was before. The Republicans get in office, we're going to set things straight, just like it used to be. Great again. So again, that's my opening remark. I am going to let my co-host and give him a greeting and give you his opening remark. Brother Aziz, how are you this evening?
Good. Greetings, and that's what I'm letting, brother. I'm here with my brother, Pastor Bright. Join us for a few minutes before he has to go out here and listen to the show.
Glad to hear from you.
What was that now?
I said, you know, we're glad to hear your brother, the minister's remarks. His greetings to us. As a matter of fact, wait till our audience is a little larger. You know how we start coming in gradually. Have your brother to just join us for a minute. But you take control of that, brother Rosley.
My signal has been weak for some reason out here.
You're coming in real good on this end.
Can you hear me good?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Sure. Can I go in your office? All right. Yeah, if I can hear you a little bit.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me any better?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear it now.
Okay. No. You're loud and clear.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, I was going to say, I was just letting my brother know what the topic was that we were talking about tonight. And, you know, we do see this influence all over the country, especially in the economics, where it really hurts us the worst. And they're in complete control of it. And, you know, the only way we can circumvent it is, as we've always said, Brother Bilal, is to do business with one another. And this is an ongoing situation we're in. If we don't do business with one another, start pooling together and forming businesses, we're going to be left out totally. Our neighborhoods, businesses in our neighborhoods that are part of us are disappearing, and we want to bring them back. We're not browbeating no one or anything like that. We're just saying that it is utmost necessary for those of us that are in business that want to let people know about their business, join us. Let us know about your business. And that's what we're about, marketing and networking your business, letting you network with other people, as well as trying to get other people to form businesses in that. And we know that the Jews totally control the financial world, but they can't control the way we spend our money. If we start taking our money and spending it and investing in one another. So it's been a struggle, and it's continued to be a struggle about us investing in one another and fighting this without being called out for being African. And, things like that when we are really Semitic ourselves. And in the very word and explanation as defined in the English dictionary, as well as other languages that describe what Semitic is, by far, we're more Semitic. We're talking about, and I've heard me today, what is Zionism? What is the Zionist? They said this guy, Roger Stone, was on TV. He told people that he was a Zionist. And I say, Zionists are the Jews that came out of Europe that, stole the so-called, as they say, hijacked the Judaism from the Jews over in Israel that were actually practicing the religion and that's taken over and just become ungodly type of leaders, and not only there but all around the world. And you know, the things that they have people doing, like in the entertainment business, a lot of people don't know that Kanye West, he is doing all with all the blacks when not, especially in the financial world. And he's been in the inner workings and seen how they do things. That's how he got all those contacts that he had, those contracts. As well as a lot of people didn't know that this guy, Kanye West, he has more Grammys than any of the other African Americans. He has 8 of them. 8 or maybe or more, but I know 8 Grammys in that. That's a big accomplishment. The guy made it, they said it wasn't what he said, was how he said it. And we hear that a lot of times often, that when people don't want to hear the truth, they'll say that it wasn't what he said, it was how he said it. Well, the point still missed. You know, what he was trying to convey is still missing. He was talking about how we in most businesses, in the entertainment world, in sports, in the places where African Americans make real big crazy money, that they don't have any African Americans as their contract negotiators. It's always got to be, you know, the someone that's Jewish to do that. So that is
yeah,
something that we
that's the fault of the black culture. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Go right ahead. Indeed, go right ahead. Brothers and sisters, we're going to open the mics up as you call in. So share in on the conversation. You don't have to wait until we invite you. We just ask that we just don't talk over each other, but we invite you to share in on the conversation this evening. I'm going to try to get everybody's say on this subject, because we as African Americans, we got to understand each other and think what we're going to do about this thing. So thanks so much, and we welcome your comments. Sir, go right ahead.
Yes,
thank you, sir. Good evening to everybody. I just wanted to say the thing that distinguishes the Jewish community, and this also applies to the Indian community, a lot of the Asian communities as well, and why they're able to succeed and be at the level they're at, is because they have a high level of demand on their children when it comes to education. You talk to any Jewish kid that's in school, their parents expect like A+ across the board. Anything below that is considered a disappointment. The same thing is true for Indian kids. Same thing is true for Chinese kids, same true for Japanese, Koreans. They all have that same mentality, which is they hold their children to a high standard and they demand academic excellence. You compare that to the black community, the total opposite. That's why when the Jews do business, that's why they got a whole bunch of lawyers, a whole bunch of accountants, a whole bunch of doctors, all these businessmen. Why? Because their foundation is high academic excellence amongst their children. You understand that? That's how they get to the point that they're at in America.
Yes.
Now, if you talk about why is black culture the way it is, this goes into our history. Now, we go back. When black people came out of slavery, like any other group, they assimilated to what was around them. Now, where were black people primarily at in the United States after slavery? They were in the South. So what culture did they assimilate to and take the characteristics of? The white redneck culture of the South. If you look at the black community today, it is almost indistinguishable from the white rednecks. It's almost identical. Even Ebonics itself, it came from Scotland. It's a Scottish dialect of English, which the white rednecks in the South were. They were where a lot of them came from Scotland. That's why they have that twang in the way they speak. It's from that background. Black people embrace that. Now look at the similarities of the two. The redneck and the black community both don't value education. They don't take it that serious. That's why those two groups are generationally in poverty, because education is not taken serious. When you look at the religious beliefs, very similar. When you look at, for example, at the time, how they used to vote, very similar. So what the black community we see today is the white redneck culture. That's what we have. Now, if you, for example, Let's say you look at Nigerians when they come to America, a black immigrant culture, right? Nigerians are some of the highest achievements when it comes to college graduation among their young people. And economically, they make some of they're one of the highest earning people in America financially as a group. Now, they're black just like African Americans are black. What distinguishes them? Why are the Nigerians financially successful and African Americans are not? It's because they have a totally different culture and a different mindset. The Nigerians are similar to the Jews and the Indians and the Asians, which is they demand and expect their children to perform in school. And the expectation is that child's going to go to college and get a good paying job or get in a business. And once they do have money, then they work together to invest in real estate and start businesses and open law firms. You talk to any, look at the numbers. You don't have to take my word for it. Look up the amount of the average income of a Nigerian in America. Look how much money they make. It's up there at the top. So yes. What we're talking about in black culture is it's not about racism. It's because that the culture that they assimilated to was the worst version of American culture, which is the white redneck, white trash culture. That's the culture that they adopted. That's what when you look in the hood and see them in the ghetto culture, that's what that is. That's just a black version of the white trash culture. It's exactly the same. So the way we can change that is we've got to get our children into an environment that will allow them to achieve higher academic success and through that to be able to get higher paying jobs. Now, how can we do that? There's the key policy that we should all be advocating for, which is school choice. For those who don't know what school choice is a policy that says the federal and state funding that your child receives when they attend a public school, that public school receives, you then as a parent would be able to take that money and apply it to a private school of your choice where the federal government will pay for their tuition. Now, if you have a child that's in elementary school, for example, that school gets on average $8,000 to $12,000 a year from the federal government. That's not even including the state funding they get when your child goes to that school. If you have a child that goes to high schools, that school gets about $12,000 to $16,000 a year in federal funding when your child goes to that school. Now, school choice would benefit lower-income black families more than anybody else. And why is that? It's because those are the families that are oftentimes stuck having to send their children to poor public schools where the teachers don't care, where they don't take academics seriously, and there's a negative influence in that school that's trying to pull the children into a criminal lifestyle, whether it be gangbanging, drug dealing, prostitution. You know what I'm talking about. Anyone who went to an all-black inner-city school knows the type of temptations and peer pressure that exists in those schools that don't exist in other schools. So if school choice became the law of the land, all of a sudden, en masse, lower-income black families would be able to take their children out of a toxic academic environment and send them to a positive one where they could actually get a good education, which would then, in the long run, be able to help them to get good-paying jobs, which will allow them to have stable families. Because what we need is young men who have a stable income that can support a family. Because once you have that, now you have the foundation for success, which is what? Two parents in the home with a stable income raising their children. That's how you change the trajectory of an entire generation right there. We do that, now we can compete with the Jews and the Indians and the Asians and the Nigerians. But until we get that fundamental aspect changed, we will continue to see the same thing we see going on right now. And so politically, this is the part that gets me, and this ties into the midterm elections. This will be my final point that any of you brothers can respond. If you would think that the Democrats who claim to represent the black community and lower-income families and the working class, you would think that they would be the number one people advocating for this policy because it would benefit their constituents the most. But then you come to find out the Democrats are against school choice. And so when I found that out, I looked into it to find out why would they be against this? This would benefit the people that they claim to represent. Then I found out that the Democratic Party gets millions of dollars every year from the teacher unions. And the teacher unions have made it clear to the Democrats that they do not want school choice. And why do they not want school choice? Because they know if parents are given the option, the vast majority of parents, especially in the inner city, are taking their kids out of public school immediately and sending them to a private school. And then these teacher unions are going to lose money. So the Democrats decided we're going to take the interests of the teacher unions and the millions of dollars they donate to us every year over the interests of lower-income black families. And that's why they resist school choice. People, politically, we've got to make it clear school choice has got to be the law of the land, period. We get that, now we're on, we change the trajectory of our people. If that doesn't happen, I don't see any other solution on the horizon that would actually change the next generation other than this. If you guys have a better idea, let me know. If you disagree, I'd love to get your thoughts. Now yield.
Okay, our mics are open. Anyone wish to comment? Our mics are open. We welcome your comments. All right, I, again, Bilal Bynum, your host. And brother, everything you said, I can't disagree with you. I can say that I myself go back to the time of segregation, when African Americans had no rights whatsoever. As a matter of fact, I stutter a little bit because I go back to the real tough times with African Americans, where we, when it came to schools, we had a three-room school right on up to the sixth grade. And I thought that was pretty bad until, like you said, I went down south. And my cousins, who was down in the southern areas, in the southern, many of them didn't have schools at all. And the schools that they did have, they couldn't even call themselves public schools. They had other names for them because they didn't want to show that we had the credibility to be as studious as, I suppose, the white community. But my point is this.
Yeah.
With all of that harshness we had to go through during our generation, and this is my opinion, but at the same time I can prove some of my opinion, but during my generation, in my time of going to school, we had black teachers in those little small 1 and 2 room schools that taught everybody from the first grade to the sixth grade, and that's everybody in the community that could get to the school. Those in my generation that got their high school diplomas and went ahead to a college were taught by some of the best black teachers that you could possibly have. Teachers back in our days.
Yes.
Well, there was no playing around. There was no undisciplined, because your teachers were somebody that you didn't want to be undisciplined or had a discipline problem with. So learning, my point is this, our generation, that harshness that we went through, we're the ones who brought about the Civil Rights Bill. And the Civil Rights Bill wasn't something that was legislated and given to us and saying, African Americans, you have equal rights or you have your freedom. This wasn't something that was given to us. This is something that we had to go out and take for ourselves. we had to show that if we're going to live in a democracy, that we are the ones who really built, because it was the black soil, which is the farming and the productions that the slaves did from that black soil, made this country the richest country in the entire world. But in 1965, we demanded our civil rights and our equal rights, and I said we did it by demand. Now let me move ahead, because we all know that that was achieved. One of the programs that was instituted right after the Civil Rights Bill was passed was called EOE, Office of Economical Opportunities. The Office of Economical Opportunities, when the doors open, and that particular federal agency was started, that's when African Americans of our generation, who didn't have the opportunities to go to any schools and trade schools, it was all for white folks. But after we fought for and got our civil rights bill, and we took in many, many programs was started in all of our communities that would give African Americans the opportunity to go to a trade, go to colleges. In other words, this is when, like I said, we was taking our position, and it wasn't a position of giving us anything. It was what we knew was we had a right to. And like I said, when it came to affirmative action, now, like I said, affirmative action is saying that now you can go to the white school. But affirmative action, and for those who wish to go to the universities, because black folks didn't have universities, we had state colleges. Those state colleges, and I attended and I got my degree. But like I said, in order for African Americans back in those days to be educated, we had to work hard. We had to work, first of all, eight hours a day, whatever our jobs were. And then you did everything you could to advance yourself. And whether it's getting your a degree or getting your certificate in trade, I know for a fact that my generation changed the entire living conditions of the African. We're the ones who a government job, our private industry, it made no difference. We're the ones, that held some of the highest positions in this country. I remember in 1965 or so, in 1970, I remember I was hearing stuff in the late 80s, 79s and early 80s, black folks who had it so good, racial, they didn't believe that there was any more racial discrimination in this country. And so again, as our generation having this affirmative action and this school integration, most of our kids now are losing the black school and the struggles that we've had to become a studious type of professional. integration and affirmative action where our young folks didn't want to go to the black school. They didn't want to have anything to do too much with the black culture. And from the affirmative advancement that we made as for civil rights, because when it comes to affirmative action wasn't a minority contractual deal. And it says minorities, these contracts, in order for you to, the government to have contracts, they had to have a so many minorities participating. Well, the white folks made white women minorities. So again, these opportunities that were supposed to be available to the black communities for advancement in business and higher education was for minorities, and white folks making white women minorities. Again, you can see what it did to the black community as far as advancement in education and what it was supposed to do. Again, it was taken, it's given, and it's taken. My question is this. As long as we during my generation, and I'm saying, and now I know, I'm talking about now my kids, my son, and now my sons are grandparents, so we're talking about their sons. All of them had to go through affirmative, like they didn't have to, but they did. Their preference was to go through affirmative action to integrated school. They didn't want it to come in and do a doing so. And like the gentleman was saying, this is why he was and I agree with him. Integration, and I asked this question about a year ago, brother. I didn't think you remember asking this question to a bunch of educators. And the educators, the black educators informed me over a year ago that when it comes to the teachers and the teaching population of this country, only around 10% of our teachers are African American. This is a nation. This is nationwide. So again, when it comes to our generation and our kids being educated, and I agree, our kids lost it. I think they lost it somewhere, but what made them lose it? Because again, their interest in school and those who was trying to teach them, and remember, those who are trying to teach you may not even want to teach you because they're not of their own people. They was taught by, again, affirmative action with white folks control, and integration, which took them out of black teachers. And I'm saying we probably, when it comes to, and I agree, education is every, that's why we brought up this subject tonight when they're talking about, I am going to take away affirmative action and we don't need affirmative action. Well, no, I agree. We don't need affirmative action. If you would distribute it, the tax of money that African Americans have been paying into the federal tax system for years, if those monies were distributed back into our communities where we could have our own education facilities, because where do you find a black school in the black communities anymore? And so again, this thing of making our kids, and I agree, our kids, this is just bringing on the stupidity that you're seeing out here today. The stupidity is good. And but I'm saying, how do you change it when the system is set up against this is a very good subject, and this is why we brought it up this evening, because we in the African American, we have a job to do. One of the jobs that we have to do seems to be that we're going to have to go back and install it. Somebody has got to take us serious. That's what happened during the 1965 to the makers of the way from segregation is they took us serious. I don't think we're taken serious about nothing anymore. And I think the example of you seeing someone saying you're anti-Semitic for saying anything this way or that way goes to show how weak our communities are, because there was a time in our communities these white folks, and I don't care what they're in there, they're Jews or white folks, they would have never been aggressive against us as they are today. And now they're talking about that John Lewis bill, they wouldn't pass a very good bill. And now we're talking about affirmative action, and they're talking about taking that away. Again, I disagree that it shouldn't, because when it comes to African Americans going to any school they want, that it should be, because these schools are sponsored by taxpayers' money. But
we can't let the Democrats use black people as a shield from criticism and push bad ideas. That's what they're doing. For example, with voter ID. The Democrats say that you can't have voter ID because it's racist. We all know that's not true, but they're doing that because they want to engage in fraud, and you can't have voter ID and engage in fraud at the same time. And so they know they don't want voter ID because they want all these illegal aliens to be able to vote. That's what they're trying to do. Everybody knows
yes.
that. That's
no,
been
agree,
their game plan for 20 years. But they're
that's
trying
right.
to say that it's racist because they're trying to say that it's hard for a black person to get an ID, which we all know is a lie. I mean, how many grown adult black people do you know that don't, at the minimum, some form of government ID? I mean, how can you operate as an adult in society today with no form of ID? That doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah.
You understand? But they're insulting us while at the same time using us. What they've done is, if you notice the Democrats, what they've done is they use racism and sexism. They always say that whenever there's something that they don't want someone to criticize them of, right? They use it as a shield so that you can't criticize their ideas. And what that has done is it's allowed for their bad ideas to be able to be put into place without any real criticism or examination of. And for me, as for one person, I'm done with that. I'm not being a little toy that they can use whenever it benefits them, because clearly in the last 40 to 50 years, they have done nothing tangible for the black community at all. In every election cycle, all they do is say, oh, the Republicans are racist, the Republicans are boogeymen, and they think that's going to be enough for us to come out and vote for them. That's crazy. Not to mention that their policies have led to the destruction of the women. The men don't need a man. They're the ones brainwashing our women with this feminism nonsense. They got women out here living for themselves, being selfish, not caring about their children. I mean, think about it. How many times you meet a woman now that will be married with children and will get a divorce for her own happiness and not even take into consideration the effect it's going to have on her children?
Right.
You understand?
Good point.
And that's
yeah.
because this feminism cancer has gotten into the minds of our women. They've bought into this idea that they don't need to submit to their husband, that they can have authority like a man, that they can somehow be the men in the relationship, and that they can raise children on their own. That's why these young kids are out here acting crazy, because most of these kids didn't have a father growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because
yeah.
either the father didn't want to take care of the child, or the woman was such a headache that the father, the man didn't want to be anywhere around her.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just be honest, man. And they knew what they were doing. And so for the fact that our people have been so loyal to a political party that has done nothing, it's embarrassing because look at the Hispanics. Right now, the Hispanic vote, if you look at all the polls right now, they're about to go 40 to 45% for Republicans. And that got the Democrats panicking. And all of a sudden, you got the Republicans and the Democrats fighting for the Latino vote, and they're both out there trying to put out a plan, put out an agenda, presenting different ideas. Why? Because they value the vote. But when it comes to the black vote, is anybody out here trying? No. Why? Because the Democrats know they got it.
Yeah.
So the Democrats feel like all they got to say is Republicans are racist, and that should be enough for us to come out and vote for them in droves. We cannot allow this anymore. This is ridiculous. It's unacceptable, especially when the Democrats have made it clear they don't want to support school choice. And that on top of that, they want our children to go to these public schools that don't teach our children anything of benefit. And on top of it, they want that LGBT nonsense in the schools. They want to teach young children that a boy can become a girl and that a girl can become a boy, and that's normal.
Yeah.
Or, and they want to teach them about homosexual sex and make it all normal to them.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, well.
We cannot allow for these psychopaths to do this to us. They're ruining our people. They're the ones that were behind Planned Parenthood, with Margaret Sanger, and the whole abortion movement, which targeted our people. And since Roe v. Wade was passed, 19 million black babies have been aborted. Let me say that one more time for everybody listening.
Yeah,
19 million. If you understand political power in America, it's all about numbers.
Yeah.
And if we had 19 million more black people in this country, we would have way more political power. But we don't, because we bought into their lies. We allowed them to come into our community and fill it with lies. Look what they've done to our people, man. We have got to break away from these people and their thinking. We can't do it, man. Nowhere in society and history has a culture been able to succeed when the men are weak and the women have authority. No successful society in history has ever had that. Because anytime you want to destroy society, you destroy the men. If you got weak men, that society can be easily subjugated. Easily. Because the women are not going to stand up. You got to have strong men to stand up. You got to have strong men to have strong families. You don't have strong men, that society will always break down. Every single time.
Thank you.
So the reality of the matter, in this next election, I don't know what y'all are going to do. I'm voting straight Republican. I will never vote Democrat again for the rest of my life. I promise you. I will never, ever vote Democrat, because these people are demonic, man. There's no other way to describe it. They're demonic.
You know, brother, I hear exactly what you're saying, and I started because it's hard for me to disagree with you, because you're right. We've never gotten anything from the being a Republican or being a Democrat, it's always been led by white folks and usually white males. And I'm like you, I've come to the conclusion that we as African Americans can no longer allow ourselves really to be governed by white folks, period. And as our democracy, our history shows that it's been basically black folks who have saved and has been more loyal to this democracy than any other group in this country. But at the same time, I realize that this democracy, as an African American, I don't have Africa. I don't have any other place in the world to stand on the soil and say, this is mine, other than right here in America. So this America, but I also know this America believes that they can, because of their political system, they can make decisions and send me right back to slavery. If I was a part and left and went along with their democracy as it is. So I am saying, as an African American, I know that I am never going to be a slave again. I'm a war veteran. And the same war that I am experienced with, and the same way they're living over in
Ukraine, I know that that could easily be right here in the United States. Don't want it to be, but it could be. Now, this republic, this idea of I'm fed up and I'm going to vote for the Republicans because we only got a couple more days. Yes, I don't see where I have a great big advantage with the Democrats. I voted for Joe Biden, and I haven't seen what Joe Biden has done a damn thing because we're the ones who put him in office, have done anything for that strong black vote. But at the same time, I know that there was an insurrection by white supremacists, and I know there was tens of thousands of them. And when they came to right here in Washington, D.C., just a few miles away from where I live, they came here and they came here, they said, to destroy our democracy, to kill the representatives who are Democrats, to kill them all, and then put their people and their kind in office that would make America great the way it used to be. Now, a choice of an election where I myself, as a black man in my community, we're not organized yet, and I say yet because I put it there because we need time still. So we're not organized yet. But at the same time, who do I bet on giving myself time enough to be organized? And when I say organized, this is where I can make myself strong and start making independent decisions myself. And you're right. I think that most African Americans should be of the Independent Party. In the meantime, until that decision is made by our communities, we need a time to organize ourselves and realize that there is something that we have to do to make independent decisions. So in the meantime, do I vote for one who's already has done an insurrection, and that insurrection is ongoing?
Because you're not evaluating the proper threat. That's the problem in your perspective. When you're bringing up January 6th,
that's not the real threat. Sir, I hate to put you on mute, but again, I am going to say on my own station what I want to say. So if you'd like to join me, you can, but don't take me over. So again, that insurrection has happened. I don't care whether I'm making sense or not. That's the whole thing. It's not a time of making sense. Like I said, I'm a war veteran. And when you attack me and I survive the attack, I don't wait for you to attack me again. No.
Did they attack you?
No.
Or did they attack the government?
And I'll get back to you. I'll give you a chance. No, I'm not going to wait for you. I'm not going to wait for you to attack me again. And so, but I do know that insurrection is ongoing. And the same folks who did the insurrections, they told us that because the Republican Party, the Democratic Party has won the House, and that they can now hold that insurrection at bay for a little while. But if the Republicans are saying if we can get back in there, then now we have the law to apply our laws and whatever what insurrection meant, we can now
make it stick, more or less. So again, when you tell me as an African American to vote for someone who's already said, I'm out to kill you, and unless you come under my rule, I am out to do you harm. And so again, to ask me as an African American to vote for a monster like Donald Trump, and those monsters, and there are millions of them who believe that who believe in fraud. They don't give a damn about the truth. They don't want to hear the truth. They have already admitted the last thing they want is the truth. And now you're talking about African Americans should vote for, and I understand your frustration, but again, your frustration cannot lead us all into total destruction. So again, that's my comments. Our mics are open. We welcome your comments.
Okay, can I respond then? Is that...
Our mics are open, and I'm going to
okay.
open up. You can
let's as a war veteran, you talk about evaluating the threat.
Let me say this. Not only can you respond, but others can also.
Absolutely.
Respond.
I just wanted, because you directly addressed my point. I wanted to be able to respond to it. That's what I'm saying.
Has their opinion, I'm asking you to come on. We'll just be respectful to each other, but come on, because this is an African American problem. This is not, and this problem could be a reality in the next week. So our mics are open. As African Americans, we have a discussion. Our mics are open. We welcome your comments.
Okay, so let's address the number one point. The Black community has been loyal to the Democratic Party for more than a generation now. And they've had direct influence over our society and culture. They're the ones that came in and were pushing abortion through Planned Parenthood of Margaret Sanger. It was in her own writings saying that we need to target.
Republicans, Planned Parenthood also. They're doing abortions just like
no,
Democrats.
If you don't know the history of Planned Parenthood, if you're going to say that.
All white folks are doing abortions. So this thing about Democrats doing abortion, all white folks are doing it.
Listen,
so
sir, the Democrats are pushing abortion in this country at no restriction all across this country. That's undeniable. Why did the Democrats go crazy when Roe v. Wade got struck down? Because they love it.
Roe v. Wade was all about white supremacy. It should have been struck down.
No, listen to what I'm saying to you. When Roe v. Wade went down, and when abortion got put on the table, what side was celebrating and what side was upset about the Roe v. Wade going down? What side was upset?
No, let me say this to you. Because, see, I can see you a Herschel Walker. I am not going to sit here.
I'm not a Herschel Walker, man. Don't insult me. I know what I've studied. And don't insult me by my name calling. I didn't name call you. I didn't insult you when you were making historically false claims.
You are a Herschel Walker, and we don't have to put up with. I mean, you're going to tell us to vote for someone who said they want to destroy us. Donald Trump wants to destroy us. And you want us to vote for somebody like that? Are you joking? Listen, our mics are open. Listeners, but again, you're the only ones that look like want to comment about their own situation. But I'm going to tell you right now, some of the stuff you talked about is towards education fund. But this stuff about Republicans are supposed to be leaders of African America. Yes. You have racism, but again, when you start talking about someone who's already done the insurrection on you, they ain't talking about doing it. They have done it. And the only thing they want now from you is for you to go back to the field. Our mics are open. We welcome your comments. But, you know. But no, I'm not going to sit here and let you say a white Democrat or a white Republican is better than a white Democrat. No, that's ridiculous. Our mics are open. I'm sorry, go right ahead. Okay, do we have any comments? All right. I know that it's just about 8 o'clock. Sister Aisha, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Hi. I can hear you very well. We're going to keep our audience with us, Sister Aisha. And we're going to, as you can see, our first hour, and I knew it was going to be a stimulating hour, and it should have been, because when it comes to racism and when it comes to the bills that especially the affirmative action bill, we know that the affirmative action bill, what it was meant for, losing the affirmative action bill is something we shouldn't lose, but I have no great big disappointment because, as we know, when affirmative action was passed, white women was made minorities, and they're the ones that got really the benefits of affirmative action. But I am going to leave it alone, and I'll now join you and let you host your next hour, and we will continue as you would want us to continue. So welcome to your own show now, Sister.
Thank you very much, Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz. Good evening to everyone. And I surely that was exhilarating conversation that you had on the political scene. And those are the kind of conversations that are important to us. It's important that we stay informed. It's important that we stay engaged. And it's important that we become empowered. Of course, in the political scene, as well our economic life, as well as in, with disaster preparedness. And I have to say that when I see our community or any community not taking this natural disaster and climate change seriously and not even talking about it, it disturbs me, because that is the reality of the day that we're living in. And we're going to have to make some big changes in our lives, whether we want to or not. Because regardless of the color of our skin, a natural disaster does not care. It would end up on my doorstep as well as a Republican or a Democrat. It doesn't care. It doesn't discriminate. So we're going to have to get serious about, stay serious about our political situation in this country. I support your statements, Brother Bilal, wholeheartedly. I also recognize that there is another phase of our lives that we're going to have to get through, and it is preparedness for these natural disasters. I'm still looking forward to Hiram Mason coming on board, and hopefully he will. He did call earlier to tell us about his. Good evening, Hiram. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and you?
I'm fine, thank you. I want to introduce to the audience Hiram Mason. Hiram and his family and friends from Louisiana survived two major hurricanes. They survived Hurricane Andrew in 1992, which was a Category 5 storm. And in 2005, they survived Hurricane Katrina, which was also a Category 5 storm. And these are the two most extensive hurricanes in U.S. history. Now, we recognize that the emotional, financial, mental, and physical stress still lingers. And these are some of the things that hopefully Hiram will address. So, Hiram, once again, thank you for being our guest tonight. And we would like to start with Hurricane Andrew. Just tell us how Hurricane Andrew impacted your family.
Let me go further than that. Let me go further than that, because we had a hurricane came through New Orleans. It was called Betsy. Hurricane, I don't know if any of y'all remember Hurricane Betsy.
Betsy was
one that flooded New Orleans the first time in my lifetime. And I've seen bodies floating down the street when the weatherman said, "Get evacuate, you got to get out." Most Louisianians are not travelers. They wasn't until Katrina. But before that, the Louisianians don't travel. They're homegrown. We do everything here at home. And it was important, but we forgot what to do in case a hurricane comes. And first thing we have to do is fill up our bathtub full of water, because the toilet's got the flush. You get the paperwork, all your titles to the property or your land or your health bill. You get all your paperwork together, put it in one spot where you can grab and go. When the weatherman say evacuate, you got to go. Don't be saying I'm going to ride this one out and riding that out. A lot of people that I missed sitting on ride it out, they're not here anymore. Everything when Katrina hit, everything I own, I lost with Katrina. But Betsy was an introduction, because my wife her family had to break a hole in the roof of the house to escape the water. But we find out other aspects of that Hurricane Betsy was under the table called demolition. They dynamite the levees to save the city of New Orleans. Now, they don't like to talk about that too much, but we were in that. My wife's family barely got out, and it was six of them at the time. And was rescued by amphibious boats. That's when I had a boat. My neighbor had a boat, and to evacuate, I had a boat running around helping people to get out. But it's just the idea you see people strapped to telephone pole, bodies floating down the street and stuff. I saw that when I was 15 years old when I witnessed that. Then when Hurricane Katrina came, well, they had Hurricane Margie, Hurricane Andrew, Hurricane Ida, all these different hurricanes. The main thing, the weatherman, right now we have technology. You can sit there and watch, and what that weatherman is telling you, his games is a move that he have to keep track of. That's when they really shine, when they tell you what the storm's going to do, like the three that's out there right now. Just because it's November don't mean hurricanes are over. It'll take you all the way to the last day of the month. Hurricanes will still be here. And typically, some of these hurricanes are guided by foreign nations. I don't know if you ever heard of that one, but some hurricanes can be controlled by man. And it's out there, but they don't talk about that too much. I forgot the name of the program, but I have it next time I talk. I wasn't all the way prepared for this, but I've been promising each for the last 3 weeks that I would take time and try to open people's eyes up to what's happening. Now, we have so much electronics devices now that you can go anywhere and keep a track of all the events. Main thing, think about your family. You can rescue your immediate family, you can get as many people you can. But when they say evacuate, but then the first thing you're going to say, which way? The right side of the storm is always the strong side. You got to avoid that. The weatherman said, go to me with Louisiana right now. We have three hurricanes out there, but they're going to hit Mexico. They're hitting Belize right now. And then they hit Mexico, and they're going to get back in the Gulf. But if cold front is going to push it further to the east, according to the weatherman, not me. I'm not a meteorologist. But you just have to stay there and try to decide which way you're going, north, south, east, or west. You know, me, unfortunately, I could go to Texas or I could go to Mississippi. You want to see Aisha?
So I want the audience, if you all want to chime in and ask Hiram a question, please feel free to do so. But Hiram, as far as Hurricane Katrina, what happened to your family? Were you all able to stay there in Louisiana, or where did you end up? And what is the state of?
We ended up in Texas. Was that by choice? Yeah. I always prepare for storms. We always, when they say evacuate, I'm already on the road long before. I was on a highway one time. What was the name of that hurricane? Ada, trying to get to from Houston to Lafayette, 17 hours, and didn't get there. Turning around and going back to Houston, rode the storm out. But it's not a choice. Well, most people, like, we have relatives in Houston. I have relatives in Arkansas, Mississippi. It depends. I have a choice to go any direction, but always go away from the storm. The weatherman going to tell you exactly what that storm is going to do. They come pretty close. They miss a lot of time, but they're pretty accurate right now. I've never lost a family member in any of the hurricane. We lost. My house was completely underwater for Hurricane Katrina. Katrina people in Houston said, we tired of hearing about y'all and Katrina. I said, I'm tired of living it.
Mm.
You know? So there's people out there that's like that, you know. They tired of hearing about.
So was it a welcoming? Environment for the migrants from Louisiana into Houston for you all?
I don't know how to answer that. There's some good and there's some bad. But my wife has quite a big family that's in Houston. And we had help from them, and I had a lot of friends in Houston and in Dallas. So my family always did travel, and we have connections. We well connected as far as getting out. Most Louisianians during Katrina didn't have no transportation. New Orleanians, New Orleans East is the central New Orleans, and there's the uptown New Orleans. It's divided. It's been like that since before slavery or after slavery. And when they say evacuate, the city wasn't prepared to evacuate the poor people. A lot of people drowned in the nursing homes. You have to get people to think ahead of time and don't be bullshit. I'm going to ride this or not. It's a little hurricane. Yeah, it's a little hurricane. Yeah. Once you experience it, you'll be ready next time if you survive this one or the one that's out there. Two bad ones out there right now, but they're going every direction. Belize is being hit right now, and that storm going to cross over Belize and hit the Gulf again. Now, where it go from there, they see a cold front coming from the west is going to push that storm. It could push that storm not further enough to push it away. I'm talking about my position here in New Orleans. You know, New Orleans, we're 18 feet below sea level. We know that when something heavy like that coming through, it's going to flood. And now I think they kind of learned, after Katrina, they learned to evacuate. The city is more prepared to evacuate a mass amount of people like they did for Katrina. Quite a few people was left behind, and they drowned. 89 people drowned, but all together was out close to 3,000 total.
Wow.
And they bodies stayed in refrigerated trucks. I think they still have bodies in some of these refrigerated trailers from the coroner's office. It's nothing to joke with. It's nothing to play with. So any questions for anybody?
Yes, sir. That might be able to help out with this, but I have a question, sir. I see you've been through quite a few disasters, but let's go back to Katrina, which has been a few years now. And so, I heard you talk about how you had a family in other locations such as Houston and what have you. So we're talking about more or less on the recovery side of the disaster. So on the, since we are, and that's what I was curious about is the recovery side. And Sister Aisha, I'm very curious about when it comes to mitigation now. They have been through, it's been quite a while. And of course, our first topic we were, and of course we continue to talk about different things, but right now we're talking about the disaster. But when it comes to the mitigation side, and it's been quite a few years, sir, have you seen any kind of recovery in your community from FEMA or the federal government? And I like to know the recovery of New Orleans, the more or less, and I'm looking at the white side, the prosperous side of the city, and then I'm looking at your side of the city or my people's side of the city. What kind of a recovery have the federal government or FEMA given our peoples, or given Louisiana itself, since that a hurricane, and it's this recovery, a mitigation, is it still going on? And I will listen to your answer.
Actually, we all learned from Hurricane Betsy about city flooding. I woke up on Hurricane Betsy standing in 3 feet of water, 3 o'clock in the morning. We learned the first, we had no warnings or anything back then, no sirens or anything. All I know that we got out for, my house was a little bit above the ground, my daddy's house. And we didn't lose anyone, but we learned a lesson from that hurricane for Katrina. We knew they dynamited the levees for Betsy to save the business parts of the city, which I probably get sued from that, but they're talking about that. That's stuff that they don't ever talk about, hurricane. But now the city's prepared for evacuation. They're going to utilize all the public transportation, take people wherever direction they need to go into in before the storm hits. But you got to get out ahead of time. You get caught up in you reverse the interstate, left or right. There's one way in and one way out. You have to evacuate. But most people in New Orleans didn't know what to mean. Evacuation means where could they go if they don't know anyone else outside of New Orleans. They have no experience as far as traveling. New Orleans are not traveling. They're not, now they're traveling because they've been sent all the way up to Utah and Detroit and Chicago and places like that to recover. FEMA did all right, but they can always do a whole lot better than what we've been seeing. They give you a little chump change to say, here, take that would cover that, but you never recover what you lost.
Well, you know, Hiram, the mitigation, I saw a report that said, now, first, the mitigation is taking efforts to reduce the impact of the storm. Okay, this is before recovery. To reduce the impact of the storm before it hits. These are efforts you have to take. And
okay,
disaster preparedness, huh? Now,
the city is always prepared. We have more pumping stations around New Orleans right now than any place in the world. Water come in and we pump it out. When the storms hit us, we have protection as long as the pumps are running. If the pumps get shut down, then that's when the water starts rising. Right now, the Mississippi River is almost like a canal. The water levels have dropped real far. That's Mother Nature. That's not you can't prepare for that. You know.
Yes. The city of Louisiana got something like $1.2 billion from HUD for mitigation projects. And as of last year, it had only spent 2.4% of those funds.
Wow.
So that, in my mind, it said there's still a lot of money on that Louisiana can utilize for mitigation efforts. And it very well might be the pumping stations for future storms, or it could be other things that the city will do. But mitigation money. Huh?
We're Louisiana. Yeah. Louisiana politics is you're stepping on some high heels there.
Give us an example, if you would, brother, because when you say the high heels and you're stepping on this and you're stepping on that, can you be a bit more specific?
The money comes to the people that need it.
Okay.
You know, the mitigation, the money is if people live off of hurricanes, you know, the contractors, you get all the crooked contractors coming in Louisiana, New Orleans to rebuild. They start a project and cheat you out your money. People that's not business-minded or have children that's educated enough to know what's right and what's wrong. Every hurricane we get this. We get predators that come from up north, come south, to get their cleanup team, which they all they want is a down payment to get the money and run. And they're not being prosecuted by the city. That's another territory there. But
yeah.
We're in Louisiana, and Louisiana politics is that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that there is over $16 billion in community development block grant money that was allocated.
The public never see that money. The public never see that money.
And so this is supposed to be for activities that lessen the impact of future disasters. So it's mitigation money for future disasters.
No, they work it out. They keep that. They do spend a lot of money on areas like Lakeview area, the Causeway area, it's money areas. The poor people got, like, what's the actor that built houses down in New Orleans? What's his name? I can't think of his name right off here, but he built cheap houses. The houses are falling apart now. People are...
Well, you know, when you have a hurricane, it's going to affect the integrity of the soil. And when the integrity of the soil is impacted, you're going to have land that sinks, that where houses that are not prepared, built correctly, they're going to fall apart because you can't build a house on shaky soil, and it won't last. So we understand how that kind of thing will happen. So what do you think? Are there community action agencies in Louisiana that you know of that are working with poor people who have been seriously impacted by hurricanes in the past?
Red Cross and Catholic Charities.
Wow.
Those two organizations, you do get a little help, but not enough to make a big difference. It's just survival.
Sister Aisha, if you don't mind, and especially with the figure that you just mentioned that has already been allocated.
And
the percentages of the monies that have been spent from the allocation. And like the gentleman said, monies go to the prosperous communities. But when it comes to the lower class communities, they get just a small stipend. Now, Sister Aisha, I know, and I know from your informing, and this is why I tell so many, and I hope our listeners are listening, that you're being with FEMA for so long, and knowing what we don't know, like the gentleman was saying on, early on our station, and I agree with him when it comes to education and being informed, we are way behind. But then there are many of us that are well informed, and not well informed, but they're teachers like yourself all over the world and all kinds of different universities. What is it that a community like this brother lives in, monies that are sitting there waiting for a recovery, but there is no recovery because for whatever reason, maybe trying to do the paperwork that the government requires. But what is it you think is stopping a community like this brother lives in and the allocations of monies that are just sitting there? Why can't there be a quicker recovery for these people?
Well, you know, I really do think that one of the things that we as a community of people, and I say African-American people and all poor people, people who are underserved in the society, we have to become organized and work together. Now, trust me, these groups that are receiving the funds, they are well organized and they work together.
Yep.
And we are not doing that. Now, there was a time, especially during the 80s and the 70s, that we engaged in community empowerment activities. We had community organizers going throughout the community to inform the people of how to work with local and state and federal government to get the resources. Well, that has pretty much, it has completely dried up. But you don't see that anymore. You don't see anyone raising, helping to raise up the poor community through knowledge and developing a strategy to approach the federal government. And trust me, this is what this organization is all about. We are working to bring a large coalition of organizations, nonprofits, for-profits, faith-based organizations, people of all underserved people together into one unit. And we will go after those funds. People need jobs. If you are trained, you can go to a community and train 20, 30, 40 people. They in turn can train hundreds and hundreds. So we're talking about the training people to train the people, trainers to train the people. That's the kind of army that we need going forward. Now, we've had that before, and it worked, and we know it worked, and the data proves that it works. But if we do not become mobilized, if we do not become educated, we will find ourselves in the same condition with after Hurricane Katrina and after Andrew and Betsy and Ida, Irma, all of these hurricanes once again. And this, we will be having this conversation 5-6 years from now. But we must pull all of these nonprofits. If you have a nonprofit organization or an organization, a church organization or a faith-based organization, ask one of their representatives to make contact with Black Belt Wall Street and get on the list of organizations who want to work on this issue of mobilizing the community. This is what we want the community to do. Does that, ask me questions about that if it's not clear. But we need the numbers. We need the people coming together. The money is there. The money, since 2019, HUD alone has allocated more than $16 billion of community development block grant mitigation funds. Okay? The funds are allocated. And in 2021, natural disasters cost the U.S. over $145 billion. I bet you how many of us in our community saw any of that? Your people see any of that down there in Louisiana?
I do not think so. I know there's money out there. What they're doing right now, they have a major road construction throughout the city. Every pothole in the city they're trying to cover, but they dig and then they sit and let that sit for 6 months. Then they come on back and do a little sand and let that settle for about 6 months. And they're jumping from pothole to pothole throughout the whole city as I speak now. If you have a car in New Orleans, you better get your SUV to come down here. But the money's being spent, but you have to know how to get it.
We know how to get it, but we got to come together. We have to come together and bring all of our organization constituents into one part. It's not going to be a problem because we've done it before. We can do it again. It's not going to be a problem. If we make it a problem and don't do it, our demise is going to come fast when these storms come. Okay, so yes, we've got to not make it a problem. But I understand your point, Hiram. You know,
Go right ahead.
As a matter of fact, like I said, brothers and sisters, we got about 15 minutes left. We want you to share in on. We need your comments. Before we open our mics up and receive the comments, though, Sister Aisha and Brother Aziz, would you give the audience information as to where they can contact Black Belt Wall Street and become participants and especially learning the disaster programs that Sister Aisha is actually teaching. Would you, Brother Aziz, would you share that information? And Sister Aisha, any other information you want to share in addition to that, go right ahead. Brother Aziz.
Oh.
Go ahead, Sister Aisha. Go ahead.
Yeah, you can send me an email. I would love to hear from you. And my email address is Aisha, A-I-S-H-A, at summit, S-U-M-M-I-T, E as in an elephant, ERA.com.
And Brother Aziz, you want to share information as to where they can contact New Africa Black Belt Wall Street.
Brother Aziz, before you do that, let me repeat this because I left off a letter. It's Aisha, A-I-S-H-A, at summit, S-U-M-M-I-T, E-R-A, Inc., I-N-C, .com. Okay. Go ahead, Brother Aziz.
Yes, yes. And greetings to our people. That's something like them. Yes, we're on the New Africa Business Association. Black Belt Wall Street is on every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And our contact information, you can either contact us at newafricaba@gmail.com or New Africa Business Association. Or, you know, you can contact us at our regular call at number every week, 383-1372, 657-383-1372. And that's it.
Okay. And so, brothers and sisters, we got about, and Sister Aisha, got about 10 more minutes left. We will continue. But, like, we have our mics open, so all of our listeners, any comments that you may have before we close out in the next 10 minutes,
Our mics are open. We welcome your comments.
Yes, sir. I want to, you know, definitely, my name is Shabazz. I'm calling from South Carolina. But just telling on to the back of what the young lady was just saying, you know, for the situations of emergency preparedness. And I think it is a one, even when we go to Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921, although I wasn't around then, but it seems like just hearing the stories, hearing the scene, the setting about of what was going on, it was in an America where you had folks in the Americas, and you had a portion of us that were going through an emergency, and there was another portion of the quote unquote Americas that were actually the ones that were causing the emergency. And I want to kind of go to that place as it relates to what we're discussing now. You know, it is oftentimes said that the project buildings, the old buildings that are oftentimes on our side of town, because I think, like the brother said, a lot of times we can't even get potholes fixed. So what does that say about the old lead piping that has been in some of these buildings for so long? And then it winds up getting into the children. And we are at a place like now, well, hey, why are the children acting so crazy? The children are this and the children are that. But the reality is that when our children are having, when they've been having exposure to leads, heavy leads, these types of particles, it science proves that it does go back to ADD, ADHD, and things of that nature. When we're talking about the current condition of emergency that is even in our community outside of just natural disaster. And like the sister was saying, we are going to have to be the ones that fix this problem, even when it comes down to what happened in Hurricane Katrina. You know, I think Barbara Bush said that, you know, it might have been a good thing that we perished, that we died down there, because so many of those people were on government assistance. You understand? That's what that brought. That's what she said. You understand? So meaning, because we were the ones that were the beneficiary, or that we were, in their case, we were plaguing the system by now needing the resources. Now that we were gone or we were dead, it might have been an okay thing. And this is how they look at us, profane, gorm, or however it is they look at us as the useless eaters, and we have to be the ones to now have or engage in a level of politics. In my opinion, up until this day, we haven't had a level of politics that has been on the scene and been a representation for us. Hence, therefore, that's why we are still dealing with the same situations that my grandmother was dealing with. They used to talk about these same things in the church. Why can't we? And we're finding ourselves more separate. I'm seeing more black folk, and I'm not taking any shots at anybody, more black folk with yellow wigs, with purple wigs, with blue wigs, rather than trying to identify ourselves and having a commonality with each other, going back to, you know, something that is organic to us. We want to now try to go outside of ourselves to now please this thing on the outside of who we are. And I don't think that thing is going to work. But like the sister said, if we don't come together on these types of situations, whether it be religion, politics, all these things, if we don't come together and have some type of form of commonality, we will be going backwards, or it will be our times, like the sister said.
Brother Shabazz from South Carolina, please send me an email so I can get that with you. Okay.
Oh, yes, brother. Yes, ma'am. And I can say this, that I've been battling, dealing with cancer for the past 8 to 9 years, and that me as being a fighter in on that realm, you know, having to, you know, assist others, or, you know, because I do know that all the alternatives that are, you know, we don't really have that on our side. So I try to be an educator, someone that is now providing those alternative holistic methods that a lot of times work,
for people that are in cancer, that have cancer and things of that nature. So that's one thing that I'm finding, you know, funding is going to be very important, you know, for me wanting to help myself heal and also other folks. But when you look at it, and when I try, like, there's nothing out there. It doesn't seem like there's anything out there to try to help myself on this mission to try to help other people, get them engaged in exercising and other things that the doctor doesn't always promote. The doctor doesn't promote these healthy lifestyle changes. But we know that it's very important, you know, predicated upon your success.
Right. Well, we're out there, and we're going to stay out there by the grace of God until people come on board. But let me just say this to you and to the audience. UNICEF, you know UNICEF, estimates that climate change will increase the mortality rate for children, especially children under 5 years old, okay, stating that 88% of the existing burden of diseases as a result of climate change is put on children under the age of five. 88% of the burden of diseases as a result of climate change is put on children under the age of five. And so, brother, yes, you're right on target when you talk about the children. If we don't do something to save our children, we'll be punished for that. So we've got to get together. And UNICEF, United Nations International Children Emergency Fund, put out this report. So let's come on board, folks. Let's get together. Brother Shabazz, send me an email so I can respond to you, because you know organizations in South Carolina, and those organizations, I'll reach out to them and ask them to join us. But we've got to have the people behind us when we go to these federal agencies. They'll be hard-pressed to turn us down when we say we need resources to do a certain project in our communities.
Okay? And Sister Aisha, when you say we, and Sister Aisha, when you say we, we're talking about going there with at least a million strong. Brothers and sisters, we're coming to closure. I'd like to say that the New Africa Business Association, along with all of our national directors from many different states, you've heard from a few of us, but it's the New Africa Business Association. We don't have too many channels of communications where we can communicate with each other like we're doing today. We don't have ABC News, NBC News. So information getting into our communities is just not going to get there. But we have to, so again, the New Africa Business Association, we invite you to come in and participate every Wednesday from 7 to 9 p.m. And of course, we're doing it because, again, we need these channels of communications, especially during these times that we're living in. Sister Aisha, Sister Aziz, any greetings that you guys want to give just before we close out? I'd like to thank our audience for your participation.
Yes, and I would like to thank Hiram Mason, and Hiram will be back with us again, and he's going to bring other people with him, and we're going to have this conversation about these disasters and the impact on our family, especially our children, as we go forward. So thank you, Hiram, and we'll be talking through the week, okay? And thank the audience.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Just get on. All you need is faith. train to Jordan, picking up passengers coast to coast. Faith is the key. Open the doors and board 'em. There's hope for all among the loved and most.
So people get ready, that a train will come.